Today on Movie While Us, we talk about The Good Lie and Fury. It's time for Movie While Us. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, Dee as well.
Movie While Us is your weekly list of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, the show is for you. Happy Friday.
Hello.
Good evening.
It's been a long week.
It has indeed been a long week.
We've seen three films.
Yes.
And screenings.
Yes, and Summer Civilians.
Yes.
Catching up.
Yes. And there's film festival stuff. And
It's going to be a bit of a mammoth recording session today.
Unusual for a Friday evening.
Have we ever recorded on a Friday before?
I don't think so.
No, it just shows you are growing old.
Yeah, this is what life has come to. It's like instead of being out at the party.
Westing around a table.
Well, there's nothing I would rather do.
That's true, actually. I think it's quite a nice way to spend a Friday evening.
No, but to our great credit, we've never done it at Fridays before.
I know.
So I'm going to dwell on that.
I'll bring your pipe next week.
Yes.
And your slippers.
And my velvet coat.
Actually, that would be fun. We should do a slumber one. I'll put in a plug once more.
For Halloween.
I love slumber parties, but we never do them.
I don't like to sleep in other people's beds.
I know, I'm the same.
Yes.
It's not that I don't like sleeping in other people's beds.
You've got to be careful where you say that.
Yes.
Well, even then, I do not. Carry on.
I think I like to wake up in my own
house.
You're
not going to sleep in our bed if you stay here. You're going to sleep in the spare bed. Just to make that clear.
No, that's not what I meant. I don't like to sleep in anybody's any bed. You know what I mean?
It still doesn't help.
I think it's better if you say, I prefer to wake up in my own house in the morning.
Okay, yes. I even in a corner of my own house, yes. I like to wake up in my own home.
Yeah, yeah.
With somebody else.
Yeah, preferably. Hopefully they're not in some other corner.
I know. Films about war.
Oh, well, I thought we were going to do The Good Lie first. I would guess that is a film about war. Okay. Let's segue straight into movie
I was worried
one,
where that was going to go.
And talk about The Good Lie. Rashmi, I think you're introing The Good Lie.
Yep. So they were known simply as the Lost Boys, orphaned by the brutal civil war in Sudan that actually began in 1983. I can't believe it's been that long. These young victims travelled as many as 1,000 miles on foot in search for safety. 15 years later, a humanitarian effort would bring 3,600 lost boys and girls to America. So in the film The Good Lie, Philippe Falardeau, who's the writer and director of the Oscar-nominated foreign language film Monsieur Lazare, is actually working on this movie and brings the story of their survival and triumph to life. They've actually used some Sudanese actors called Arnold Osang, Gia Dwani, Emmanuel Jal, and newcomer Naya Koth Whale. I'm sure I've butchered their names, many of whom were actually children in the war. And alongside them, we also have Reese Witherspoon, who's kind of, you know, front and center of all of the posters. So this is directed, like I said, by Philippe Falardeau and Sean Linden, and it's written by Margaret Nagel. So, Joe, you and I were lucky enough to catch this at the film festival and see
the
some
San
interviews.
San Diego Film Festival, yeah.
Catch some interviews with the actors afterwards. But Yazdi, I know you weren't able to make that screening because you were busy doing other ones.
Yes.
And you caught this one after. So I'm excited to hear what you thought about this because I think Joe and I probably exchanged some thoughts because it was a film festival. But
that's not the one,
I remember what you thought.
The one place that we can break the movie while let's never discuss a movie before the podcast rule is a film festival. So I actually forgot what you thought about
it. Yeah, I did too.
We didn't talk about it much because I think we had in mind that we would do a review.
Correct. We knew this was going to be a big release. So Yazdi,
just to plug the film festival. I mean, they did a great job this year, and they had they didn't have Reese Witherspoon there, but they had a number of the. Ugandan
Somalian
actors.
Wow.
Yeah.
They had a number of the Somalian actors there, which was really nice to see. And
the main protagonist, who surprisingly is a British actor.
Yeah, that was kind of strange.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes, and the lady who plays his sister is actually American. Never been to Somalia. So very interesting.
But they also had the screenwriter there, which was kind of nice to see what her She spoke a little bit about her process and how she kind of came up with the idea for the movie. So that was kind of nice to hear.
So without further ado, Yazdi, tell us what you thought about The Good Lie. Was it a good lie?
Yeah, so Roger Ebert very famously said that what moves us most in cinema is not sad things, but what moves us most is people doing good things in spite of themselves, in spite of their situations. And I think this movie is a very good example of that. It's not a movie without tragedy. It's a story with a lot of tragedy to it. But the parts which moved me most were not the tragic parts. It were the parts where people went outside of, you know, their shells and bubbles and did something good that was outside the sphere of their influence. And I was greatly moved by this. I think this is a necessary story to be told, because what a great story this is. And I'm glad that somebody thought to make this movie. It's a good film. It's a good film.
Joe.
And they are Sudanese, not Somalian. So we got that completely wrong. I enjoyed this movie very much. I think it's well crafted. I think, you know, it doesn't have a very big budget Hollywood feel mm-hmm. to it, which is kind of nice. I think the story does feel a little forced in a way. I think they you know, really wanted to do the Hollywood version of this story. That's not to say that that's a bad thing. It's just it has that almost Disney edge to it in the background. But a very enjoyable film. I mean, you know, the only thing that I will criticize a little bit is that it was clearly penned by somebody who is not of Sudanese origin and maybe didn't have a full background in the war, because I think she had this kind of, there were some very xenophobic, almost fish out of water moments where, you know, you have the Africans in America kind of looking at an escalator thinking, I've never seen one of these before. And I've seen that done one too many times. It's, you know, the kind of the gods must be crazy type moment. And
just this year, this was done, I think, almost as well in The Million Dollar Arm.
Correct.
Which I didn't see, right, but right. I feel that those moments can be a little annoying, because I think, you know, they're not from another planet, they're just from another country. But
so where
where
I think this film will kick you in the stomach is how well it portrays that ultimately innocent children are often the victims and casualties of war and the heirs of the heirs of misery. I would say that, I think, Joe, you just started to allude to it, that this is a movie of two halves. The first, where I had an overwhelming desire to just sob my way throughout the movie whilst we see these incredible children who are so young and have to face such adult situations. I think that first half was way more superior than the second half, which is when we see how they are affected and now living in the US. And that, to me, I agree with you, Joe, felt a little bit more melodramatic. And I think that second half undid a lot of the good work done by the first half. But yeah, overall, I would say a good movie.
Yeah, that second part kind of is almost trembling under the shadows of The Blind Side.
Correct. And I think that's what
I wrote that in my notes. Yeah. I said it's very moving, but it's a touch Blind Side.
Yeah, I mean, I think that first half of the movie is so effective because, again, I don't know much about these filmmakers, but I think they have very wisely chosen some pretty unwatchable, unbearable things happen to these kids, and the movie never once dwells on it. You know, it just keeps that first half. It covers a lot of ground very quickly. A lot of things happen to this, you know, this family of kids, and the movie does not wallow. It does not wait. It doesn't, you know, overly try to manipulate you and make you cry. It just is almost presenting it very, very, you know, factually. This happened, then this happened, then this person died, this happened. And because it kind of comes from this place of objectivity, I think it really wins over the audience. Correct. Because then it truly does move you, because you know that these filmmakers are not necessarily trying to squeeze, you know, emotionality from one of, you know, tens of events where that might have been done. So I really like the restraint which was used in that first half of the movie.
Yeah, and I think the emotion comes from the fact that you're seeing these children become men and women within minutes, having to face these difficult situations. And you're right, it doesn't give judgment on the situation, it just presents it. And that's where I think the amazing emotionality comes from. I was literally in tears that first half.
Yeah, that, I've forgotten actually, because we saw it a few weeks ago, just how effective that first half was. In fact, for probably about 20 minutes or so, I almost thought I was in the wrong movie in some ways, because the movie has this, you know, the Reese good lie, Reese Witherspoon picture up front and center, and she doesn't appear until much later in the film. You know, because they are talking about what happened to these kids in the Sudan war situation. But, you know, it was definitely a very, very almost hard to watch at times, you know, that movie. And, you know, that switch in tone that we get as soon as they land in America is, you know, perhaps a touch inappropriate given the tone of the early part of the movie. It suffers from schizophrenia in that regard.
Yeah. And I think, sorry, the other thing is that, you know, I know why Reese Witherspoon is billed as top talent, right? Because that's
she's
what's going to draw
warmer,
the...
Right? She's right. going to bring the...
Right, she's going to bring the crowds
the bums
in.
Right.
But be assured that she's not the main character in the movie. My only criticism, you know, she does a great role. This is a slightly different Reese Witherspoon than we've seen in a while. But it was too reminiscent of Erin Brockovich without the bite for me.
Mm. I think it could have been a lot more Erin Brockovich than it was. So I agree. I you know, she see, it's very difficult to do these do-gooder roles without coming off like you're pandering to the story. So considering that, I still give it credit. And I like Reese Witherspoon. Reese Witherspoon can be cute like nobody's business and, you know, do her romantic comedies and good on her. But I really like when Reese Witherspoon is not Reese Witherspoon. I mean, one of my favorite roles of hers was from last year in the movie Mud.
I knew you were going to say that,
know?
Yeah.
And this movie kind of used clothes that I want her to become old and gray, like I want many actors, where she stops being the center of the movie and she just can be a really good character actor.
And she's working incredibly hard this year. I mean, we've already seen her in about 4 movies and some that are coming up already we've been able to see. So, I mean, she's working incredibly hard. And I think... almost trying to do that Matthew McConaughey thing, which I think she's done already successfully, but she seems to be really pushing herself in directions where she hasn't been before.
Well, I mean, for me, I thought the performance she had here was remarkable in that we had just seen her in the lead role of the movie Wild. And there's just a completely different
person. 180.
I mean, it's hard to believe that it's the same actress portraying these characters, because the physicality and the you know, just everything about the two different people that she's playing in these roles is, I mean, it couldn't be more different. So, you know, I think for me, when I saw her in this film, I still had the Reese Witherspoon from Wild in my mind, which was very much, you know, a grittier, tougher, more kind of introspective, selfish Reese Witherspoon than in this movie, who, you know, we kind of had her be the Southern Belle, but, you know, certainly the one with a mission.
Right. And then we know that Inherent Vice is coming up, which looks quite reminiscent of American Hustle. And she's the lead in that movie too. So
I think I don't know if she, she's in the movie. I don't know if she's the lead, but she's certainly the most high-billed female star in the movie. And I do want to say, as maybe mawkish is too cruel a word, but as slightly manipulative as the second half of the movie feels, I think the movie has a really strong last act. And, you know, again, we just saw kind of a toned-down version of this with Million Dollar Arm and then, you know, The Blind Side and so forth. But that last act of the movie... really did move me. I mean, it's where the movie kind of justifies its name and explains why it's called what it is. And I that really worked for me. But then again, I'm a softie. I you know, this kind of stuff gets to me.
No, and it worked for me too. I think the ending brought it together. But I mean, it sounds like we're coming to a summing up. So, Joe, why don't you start summing up and give us a score?
You know, this is a very effective movie. I mean, it was moving in places and, you know, it didn't quite draw tears from me at the end, but I was very close to that in that this was a very moving story. It's not necessarily a true story in that it's a biopic in any way, but it is based on, it's crafted around real events that occurred. And there are people who had this type of situation happen to them. So, you know, for that and, you know, the movie's overall sincerity, I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10 because I really did, enjoy the experience, and it's just, a set of events that I really was unfamiliar with, and you know, I feel very enlightened for having seen it.
Yes, Dee.
Yeah, I mean, people always ask me, well, not people, not always, but people frequently ask me, you know, for recommendations for movies. And I struggle because I never watch a movie from the perspective of sitting and watching it with my family. And there are very few movies I can really recommend that a whole family watch together. Because I've been there where I've said, oh, this is a great movie, you should watch it. And somebody came back and said, did you lose your mind? That movie had this the scene in the middle where this person was doing this, or, you know. And I'm like, oh, I completely forgot about it. But, you know.
You did like Holy Motors.
I did like Holy Motors a lot, and I'm going to stand by it. But I think this movie might even be required viewing in schools. And I think this is a great little movie for families to watch together. It has some very, very serious, harsh subject matters that it circles around. But at the end of the day, I don't know, it kind of does redeem your hope about humanity and how we can be better as human beings. And, you know, everything that it says about war, it says so non-judgmentally. So, I 7.5 out of 10, I can be generous and bump it up to 8. And I will, just based on the good intentions of the movie, 8 out of 10.
Okay, so this film was apparently 11 years in the making, and I think it's worth a watch, not because it was 11 years in the making, but because it's a poignant, competently made movie that I think just fell shy of greatness because the second half just seemed a little bit more disposable compared to an incredible first half. It did really make me want to watch the 60-minute segment with Bob Simon called The Lost Boys. So if you're interested in this subject matter, there is apparently a 60-minute segment. You know, I'm somewhere between a 6 and a 7. I will give it a 7 out of 10.
And of course, there's a very famous, it's a bestseller called The Lost Boys of Sudan. There's a, you know, based, the actual story is in that book as well. So I look forward to finding out more about it, reading up on that.
Yeah, the Q&A after the movie with the screenwriter there, you know, did allude to a little bit of production hell that this movie suffered from. I mean, it was a script that was kind of passed around and refined, and so, you know, you can see why maybe this story was a little bit of a studio risk, and maybe they did sweeten up the end of it just to make it a little more accessible to others. But anyway, let's move on to movie number 2. This is Fury. Yazdi.
Yeah, so Fury is written and directed by David Ayer, who I think only earlier this year released the movie Sabotage, which I famously hated. It might still be my worst movie of the year. But of course, David Ayer did the brilliant, amazing End of Watch last year with Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Pena. And of course, David Ayer also was one of the co-writers of Training Day. And here he is with his third major Hollywood directorial effort with Fury. And Fury is set in April 1945, when the Second World War is going through its last throes, and the Allies are pushing to make their final infiltration into Germany and get, you know, exact victory for the Allies. And it in particular looks at a character of War Daddy, played by Brad Pitt, who is a leader of a group of 5 people who are stationed in a tank. Thank you. Are stationed in a tank. And actually, the name of the tank is Fury, and that's where the name of the movie comes. And this is very much a war movie, which stays very close to these 5 characters as they venture out, often through unexpected, uncharted waters to further the cause of the Allies during the Second World War. This movie, of course, came with a lot of expectations. It's already been out in the cinemas for a couple of weeks. It's been fairly polarizing, I think, in the critical media. Although, in general, it's received mostly positive or overwhelmingly positive reviews. So, what did you guys think about it?
So, I wasn't actually very excited about watching a World War II movie, but I'm surprised that Fury is a little bit different to the recent offerings that we've had in years gone by. So I think what this film captures really well is the gruesomeness of war and the tragedy and the inhumanness of hand-to-hand combat, which I haven't seen done as well in other World War movies. I think this is more about the relationship between the men in the tank and how they all need each other to live and how they become reliant on each other. And I found it to be a really deep movie about what war does to people who fight in it versus the reason for the war itself. And I'm really glad that it kept the propaganda to a minimum until right at the end. Although I didn't love the movie, I really admire it for what it's trying to do. And I think this has some really good acting in it.
Joe?
Yeah, I mean, like many of the great movies about war, this focuses on the men and not the politics or the bigger picture or, you know, the objectives. This focuses on the day-to-day kind of battle scenarios that the people on the front line have to face. And for me, you know, this was a stonkingly good war movie. I think, like you said, Rashmi, it really does have that highly visceral, you know, very gruesome depiction of what it must actually be like to see all of this death, decay, and carnage around you, you know, to lose people instantly in very violent ways around you all the time. And it feels like definitely a little bit of a guy movie. I mean, I think I don't know that this is a kind of a broader appeal. It's like it's men in men situations, men being manly and tough and warlike, and men being emotional in a way that men can be under these types of circumstance. But overall, I really loved this movie. I think in the same way that End of Watch captured the kind of, you know, buddy cop banter that you have in those kind of situations as cops, this to me felt like we were being shown what it would be like to be part of a team driving a tank in World War II.
Yes, Steve.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something about some filmmakers which resonate for you and others which just rub you the wrong way. There's no doubt about it that, you know, David Ayer is very interested as a filmmaker in how men behave under mm-hmm. pressure. That's his defining theme. I mean, you go from Training Day to you go to End of Watch to even Sabotage. It's about, mm-hmm. you know, you take a group of people and put them under a situation of extreme duress, and he wants to see how they react with each other. That's what really, interests him. That's what really interests him. And this movie is a great, great, great example of it because it's fairly claustrophobic because, for one thing, the inside of the tank space is very, very small and the camera gets in there with them. So very, very successful from that perspective in just, you know, depicting what must be a very common occurrence in wartime with people who don't really know each other or like each other, who are thrust together to, you know, essentially take care of each other's lives. Mm-hmm. And so I think the movie is very, very good at evoking that. But ultimately, the movie came off to me like a bit of war porn. It's just so obsessed with killing. And not that wars are not about killing, but it's really pushing this philosophy of, you know, all morality goes out the window when you are pushed in a war situation. And that's the truth. But for some reason, the movie rammed that so hard that it came off a little insincere to me.
I agree with you about what you said of the tank, Yazdi. The claustrophobia was both scary and endearing all at the same time. And I actually think the tank was a sixth character in the movie because I think it became the thing that was going to get them killed potentially, and also the thing that provided safe haven for them as a group. So I found that whole tank juxtaposition just incredible. That's the genius, I think, of this movie maker. I think that I didn't understand the point of the story. For me, it was just an exploration of relationships in this incredible extreme circumstance. But in terms of a story, I didn't really get one. And so I found myself just thinking, what's the point of this? And it's all very competently made.
Oh, it's
and
exceptionally it's all well made.
Not enjoyable to watch, but it's all very interesting and amazing to watch. But I just didn't come out of there thinking I had a full realized film from start with a start, middle, and end as much as I would like to have had.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's not what it was trying to be. I think in many ways it was almost a day in the life of a tank driver. I mean,
yeah,
you know, it's a kind of movie that drops you right into the middle of a situation mm-hmm. without much in the way of build up.
Yeah,
and certainly there's very little in the way of resolution. That's not to say it isn't a self-contained story because it is, but it, to me, was almost trying to give you that sense of what it was like to be in battle. And, you know, I think as a movie with that objective, it was very effective. And I enjoy those types of situations. I mean, I don't know if you ever saw the HBO series Band of Brothers.
It was one of your favorite shows ever, wasn't it?
I really enjoyed that movie because, well, that movie, that miniseries, because it was a lot more emotional. It was incredibly well crafted in terms of the stories of the men. But more than anything, that movie, much more effectively than Private Ryan, for example, made me understand just what it might have been like to have been those guys in those situations. And it focused, each episode focused on almost like a different battle. There was a movie, one called Bastogne, which was a battle that was done in the freezing cold snow and ice. I think as the Allies moved towards Russia in the war. But it was so visceral. It was so real. And you know, as a movie, it was trying, as a show, it's just trying to give you that sense of what it might have been like, how frightened you would have been, how angry you would have been at the things going on around you, and just, you know, the kind of doing your job as a soldier type thing. And that's what this movie did too.
To what Rashmi was saying, I think this movie kind of unfortunately pales in comparison to Saving Private Ryan. And I think this movie is very much very much inspired by that movie, or at least trying to better it. Not because it's a less accomplished movie or it's any worse written. I think it's because of where it gets with the finish line. Is it seems to be interested at the end only about what happens to these five people. And what happens to these five people, unfortunately, smacks of, you know, a testosterone action movie-ish kind of genre. It gets into that. I wish it had more to say about the war. And it that last hour of the movie just becomes... So that's why I doubt the sincerity of the effort. I mean, it's flawless in the mechanics of the movie and in how it's been all put together. It looks like World War II. But where it kind of headed towards, I kind of said, come on, you just want to make a badass movie. This could be Sabotage Part 2 set in World War II.
Well, the final act, I would agree with you. I mean, I think its inspiration when you talk about Saving Private Ryan is solely the D-Day landing scene, right? So the Omaha Beach scene in Saving Private Ryan with bullets whizzing and the soldiers dying all over the place. That is what this movie is for 2 hours. It doesn't try to be anything bigger. And I think it's a fair criticism at the end that, you know, it does then turn into, you know, the Arnie movie that it was trying to be, you know. Yeah. But, yeah, fair enough.
But for all of that, look, for all of the lack of story, this movie is a showcase for incredible acting from Brad Pitt. I never thought these words would ever come out of my mouth. Shia LaBeouf and Logan Lerman, who broke my heart so many times throughout the movie and holds his own in this drama, which is strange because I think at no time does this movie ever get sentimental or gushy at all. But his portrayal of this young kid in a situation that he has no reason to be in was just incredible, and I didn't even get the sense that he's a newish actor. Shia LaBeouf blew me away. I mean, this is the best I've seen him act in any movie.
I'm not going to question Shia LaBeouf. I mean, I think Logan Lerman has the highest level of difficulty because his character is such a cliche. It's completely a plot device. It's what moves. It's how you get introduced to all the characters. It what moves the story forward. Everything that happens in the middle half kind of pivots to his reaction to how things are happening.
Yeah.
And so it's a thankless, horrible role and much credit.
It's not especially well written either.
No, and I think a lot of credit rests with him that he kind of makes that character very believable and fairly realistic. And again, to give credit where it's due, I mean, I think as much as I have a problem with this movie, up until 2014, up until this point, I have not seen, there are a couple scenes in this movie which are so exceptionally, like I'm talking about, intense combat scenes. I have not seen anything like it.
Yeah.
You know, there are a couple like standoffs that happen between the Allies and the Germans. Well, the whole movie is a standoff, but, you know, there are a couple of them which are so beautifully mechanically put together. Yes, that
it's extremely, you know, well choreographed.
It's extremely well choreographed, and you have to give credit for, you know, not everybody can stage this kind of stuff very well and effectively. And, you know, the history of cinemas is the history of war movies, and to come out and do something which still impresses you is fairly, you know, it's not too shabby.
Okay, anything else to say, or should we wrap this up? Yes, Steve.
So, I get that the point of this movie is to demonstrate the degradation and dehumanization that comes from war, how it makes monsters out of men. But I really had a problem in the second half of the movie in kind of believing the sincerity of the filmmakers and in seeing that point through. It's for some reason, I love The End of Watch, but, you know, Sabotage and now this movie, there's something about this writer, this director, which just doesn't, you know, it rubs me off the wrong way. 6 out of 10.
Joe?
I really loved everything about this movie. I mean, I think, you know, we've spoken about, you know, performances, we've spoken about the gritty, gruesome reality that it portrays, but, you know, for me, it was just such an immersive experience. I mean, there was that wonderful solidity to the sound design. I mean, if you're going to go see this movie, see it loud. It's definitely a big screen extravaganza. It's definitely a bit of a guy movie. And yeah, okay, you know, the ending is, you know, is the kind of ending where, you know, everyone, it tries to invoke that kind of, you know, jingoism, I guess, you know, that kind of, you know, hero moment. And if you want to buy it, if you sit there and choose to buy it, then it works really well. And I made a deliberate decision to not be cynical about it and had a blast. So, you know, for me, this is a rock solid 8 out of 10. I thought this movie was fantastic.
So Fury will make you angry and furious again, like the good lie about the horrible losses and the futility of war. This isn't a happy escapism type of movie to watch, but I think it's a great movie about the human or the human spirit at times, and clearly a showcase for incredible acting. 7 out of 10.
Yeah, 6, 7, and 8.
Yeah. I mean, this movie has, like all of these movies do, it has that one scene where, you know, where...
I couldn't breathe.
No, yeah, for
the
sure.
The tension was that's incredible. For sure.
Yeah, but I know the one you mean. It's the Toy Story going into the furnace.
Exactly.
Scene.
You know, we've seen this in every one of these movies. Who is with me? You know, this is clearly a mission of death. Who is with me? And then, you know, if one person says, I'm with you, and the other one says, I mean, this stuff has been done to death, but somehow this works. I mean, again, I wouldn't want to be a writer writing one of those scenes, but it kind of works here. What does not work is this whole philosophy the movie has from the start. And I know we are done with the movie, but I'll just say this whole philosophy the movie has from the start that kill or get killed. And I know that's how war is, but you know, the very first scene in the movie, and maybe I'm giving something away, is when Brad Pitt, you know, stabs somebody in the face. Really? Why do you have to stab somebody in the face? Can't you just kill him by running it through their heart?
I think it tells you about the character, right? It tells you about how people cope with the situation that they're put in. And the only way he can cope with it is that he collects hats and badges, because you see them in the tank. No, right? Why do you have to stab somebody in the face?
I disagree with you, Afshmi. It's a testosterone moment.
But it's an Arnold Schwarzenegger moment.
It's a testosterone right. moment. It's a guy's being badass type guy's moment where, you know what? We all like to think that if we were in that situation where, you know, these things were going on around us, we'd be like, to hell with this. I will murder the hell out of the next guy that I come across because I've had enough with everything, right? I will murder the hell out of them. I won't take him out easily. He's going to have a painful, miserable death and I'm going to inflict it. And I think that was the moment they were trying to depict.
And I get it. And, you know, if he slashed his wrist or if he cut his neck.
It's like, here, have some sleeping pills. No, it's like, I'm going to kill the crap out of you until
you're
dead.
But to me, it seems, anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, what do I know?
But like, you know, it seems like too much effort to stab somebody in the face. Just stab him in the heart. I understand you want to kill that person. But so it seemed to me like a gimmicky thing, like, oh, look, you know, this is going to be that kind of a movie where people get stabbed in the face. But anyway, sorry.
Let us know what you think.
I'm clearly in the minority, by the way. I know that.
Well, no, I mean, I think the movie invokes those kind of opinions. And, you know, again, I think it's just kind of, this is going to be one of those movies that comes on Spike TV. Do we still have Spike
TV?
Yes,
we have Spike TV.
Movies for guys, you know, this is going to be like one of those, it'll be on right after the Fast and the Furious and, you know, those kind of, you know, hero movies. This is that kind of war movie. So don't go expecting much more than that. But
and for people who still insist on stating that, you know, Brad Pitt is not a good actor, for crying out loud, go watch this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the kitchen scene alone in this movie is
a
showcase of what he can do.
Yeah.
All right. Mail at moviewallers.com. Let us know what you think. Twitter.com/moviewallers as well. We do occasionally tweet, not just when podcasts are out, but when we have something to tweet about. So do follow us on Twitter and facebook.com/moviewallers as well. Until our next episode, it is Too Many Movies and Too Little Time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.